In a world full of distractions, there is one big question on every dog owner's lips.
How do I become more than just the person holding the other end of the leash?
We all get dogs with a dream in mind, a vision of the future. And if right now your everyday reality isn't quite that picture you had in mind, you are in the right place.
It really doesn't have to be this way.
You absolutely can and will be more to your dog than just the person who gets in between them and the world.
The key is you need to be more sexy.
More sexy than the neighbourhood cats.
More sexy than the jogger in the park.
More sexy than that half-eaten hamburger they just found on the floor.
And yes, even more sexy than the dog across the road.
I'm Tom.
And I'm Lauren.
Together we're Absolute Dogs.
And you're listening to the Sexier Than a Squirrel podcast. Welcome to the Sexier Than a Squirrel podcast, the podcast that gives you real life dog training results. And today I am joined by the wonderful Dr. Nick Thompson. Now, I've actually got a huge list here, Nick, like a massive list of accomplishments. You are one accomplished vet, and I'm going to read from it because I'm scared that I might miss something. You're a good guy. You're the founding president of the International Raw Feeding Veterinary Society. You're a fully trained vet and you have over 20 years experience. Nick's also trained in homeopathy, acupuncture, natural nutrition, veterinary herbal medicine, and so much more. And I think most of all, my introduction would say that when I was really at the depths of like low with two of my dogs, Everest and Brave, Everest, who was diagnosed with cancer, and Brave, who'd had an ANNPE, for me, you gave me hope when conventional medicine said there is no hope. So I hope that's a good welcome for you.
Hello. I'll tell you what, it's Lauren, it's an absolute pleasure. Like I said 10 minutes ago, we've been talking really important, really kind of, you know, God, is Everest going to be okay kind of conversations. So we've really been there. And yet this is the first time we've spoken face to face. So it's seriously great to talk to you. And thank you for that introduction. I've actually been doing it 30 years. I've been in veterinary medicine 36 years. Yeah. 36 years since I started at the Royal Dick School of Veterinary Studies in Edinburgh in 86. And so, there we go. And I've been in veterinary medicine longer than I've been not in veterinary medicine.
And so, Nick, let's just tell me and the audience a bit more about you, a bit more about you, who you are, what you're about, where this all comes from. Because I think for me, vets and working with, same as you, I've been in animals most of my life. At the same time, you get vets and for me, you get vets. And tell me a bit about your sort of way into this.
Do you want to know what my thing is now or how I got into my thing?
I want to know all of it. We want to know all of it. So tell us your story.
The whole thing. Okay, so my story very briefly, because I could give you 6 hours on it. Okay, so my dad was a doctor, my mum was a nurse, and I'm the eldest of four. We grew up, we always had animals, you know, rabbits and dogs and cats and goodness knows what. And because my dad was a doctor, I thought, and I faint at the sight of human blood, all right, believe it or not. I kid you not, that really, really surprises most people. But I can't stand the sight of human, especially if it's my own, especially if it's exiting my body, either in a syringe or spurting because I've cut myself or something like that. I just like, poof, I'm on the deck. So I thought, I wanted to be a vet because one of the vets in the village was a really cool guy. He wore really nice tweed suits. He had two really nice pointers who was in the back of his Alfa Romeo car. He was a really good and really compassionate guy called Hugh Littlewood. I think, I don't know whether he's alive now. God bless you, Hugh, if you're watching this, thank you. Hugh Littlewood used to play bridge with my dad every week. And he was just the nicest guy. And I just thought, I want to do something about medicine. I'll tell you, Lauren, the reason I wanted to do medicine was because I didn't want anybody knowing more about me than I did myself. You know, I think that's really important. And, you know, and having children as well, it's like you don't want to have a child who's ill who you take along to the doctor and hand it over like it was a vacuum cleaner for somebody to fix. You know, I want to know what's happening with my child so that I can be part of that journey. So I'm a major pain and I very rarely go to the doctor with the kids as well. So So that was it, really. Went to Edinburgh Vet School, did 6 years, got 2 degrees, and then started in 92. And when I started, I wanted to be James Herriot. Now, I say that to people these days, and they don't even know who James Herriot is. You obviously do. You obviously do.
Definitely do.
Yeah. And you know what? I used to have Christopher Timothy, you know, the lovely, the James Herriot vet who was on the telly back when we were young. Well, he used to be one of my clients, and that was the funniest thing. He would come in the door, and I would have this guy going, and I would be thinking, oh, my God, look, it's James Herriot. Obviously it's not, but we played that game, and he would be looking at me, and I was, you know, strapping, just like, I don't know, 25-year-old, just straight out of vet college. And so he'd be looking at me laughing, and I'd be looking at him laughing, and we'd have really nice consultations. But there you go. That was my second job. Within months of starting my first job, I was thinking, oh my goodness, there were so many diseases that I couldn't cure. And that was really, really frustrating. And also, I was treating animals, and I was giving them antibiotics and steroids and this and that, which was the standard. Okay, that's how you trained. And I just thought, if I was ill, if I had a runny nose, I wouldn't use antibiotics and steroids. If I had an itch on the skin, I might use antibiotics on steroids, but not anytime quickly. And therefore, I thought, well, let's look at something else. So I looked into homeopathy, and that was really amazing. And homeopathy led me into nutrition. I can tell you a bit about that in a second if you like. And then nutrition led me into herbs and acupuncture. And so I have been led by the nose into what I'm doing now. And what I'm doing now is I started doing all species, cats and dogs and cattle and sheep and pigs and you name it. I've treated them. And then gradually, as I get older and more grumpy, and now mainly I do dogs. I love seeing horses, but I don't do a lot of horses because I do so much stuff with dogs. And even within dogs, I'm mainly doing nutrition. And within nutrition, I'm mainly doing raw food nutrition. I am an absolute obsessive when it comes to raw food nutrition, and I think you've seen the light in that respect as well, which is really wonderful, and that's why it's so great to talk to you. So there you go, that's a potted history, leaving out 90% of it.
Amazing. I mean, raw feeding, I've always been a raw feeder since I can remember. However, talking to you made me think even harder, made me think even more purist, I suppose. Now I'm very careful, I'm much more awake, and I think that is the word, it's waking up, right? Like, this is waking up.
Yeah, I think so.
What you're putting in and what you're getting. So I suppose that takes us down the nutrition route. What would you say if you could give a basic sort of brief intro to your raw feeding to someone who's a pet owner? They've not heard about this before, they're very conventional in what they've been using, and typically you go to, I don't know, the pet shops or any supermarket, and a lot of people will still buy their foods in those spaces. How does raw feeding sort of work for the complete beginner? Like, let's not overwhelm them, Nick. What could we say is doable right now?
Okay, right. So first of all, I'm just going to show my T-shirt. The T-shirt says raw feeding, a 45 million year fad. Does it say fad? Yes, 45 million year fad, because a lot of people will say, oh, raw feeding, it's just a fad. You know, there's nothing wrong with kibble, there's nothing wrong with cans. But actually, if you think about it, and what I find is that my profession, who have been indoctrinated by the big food companies, the kibble companies, the cans companies, they find it very difficult to get their head around real food for dogs. And that's a real shame, because when I speak to kids, I speak to my kids, I speak to their friends and what have you, and they go, oh yeah, real food. Yeah, let's feed the dog. And if I speak to clients who are not medically trained, they go, yeah, obvious. Yeah. And yet when I speak to to vets who've had years and years and years of training, they go, oh gosh, no, you can't feed that because it's not balanced. You can't feed that because it's, you know, they might have bacteria in it, you know. You can't feed that because it's not balanced. And then they go home and eat a non-balanced diet, you know, a non-balanced meal. So there is no logic when it comes to these things. Yeah, I'm not blaming the profession. It's just that's the way they're trained. And they're not, if for me, they're not looking at it logically. Yeah, because if you just look at it logically, it just falls on your lap, doesn't it? It's very, very simple. So your question, getting back to your question, was how do you start, I think, was what you were saying.
Where do we start? We have many of our audience will be pet owners. And I bet a lot of people are awake to this, but I also would guess a lot of people are not. And what I think, it can become very overwhelming. You've got a bag of food versus actually, I mean, my dogs, for example, they have a huge range of protein sources. Mm-hmm. They have a huge range of different brands. I don't use just one brand. I use a couple of different brands. I really go for variety in what I'm giving. And I think if some people looked in our freezer, because we have a dog freezer, I think they'd be seriously overwhelmed. And I know there are certain ways that I would just bring people in rather than overwhelm them. Where does someone start if they have not done this before? And I think one of my tips, for example, would be, even if you can just change 10% of your dog's diet or 50%, or 60%, but maybe not even go all in, like actually just see what you can do. Because I think people can become very worried about change. Like, you know what, change is scary for people. Where does someone start with raw feeding or how?
Okay. I can do even better than that. Okay, so the super, super simple one is I've done a video and you can find it on my website. The website is holisticvet.co.uk. I imagine your amazing people will put it down below there. And so you just go to the front page there and it's like, and it's called Raw Feeding, The Basics. Yeah, it's as simple as that. Okay, it's an hour and a half, and I'm not just plugging it. Yeah, because I've made it very, very cheap, so I'm not really going to be a millionaire on the back of it. But in an hour and a half, there are 10 really short lessons which will take you from 0 to 60 on what raw feeding is all about. Yeah, in one evening's viewing, you will get it, and you will get the basics, and you'll be able to have a really intelligent conversation with your vet, or with the raw store down the road, or with the Pets at Home Brigade, or whoever it may be. And very simply speaking, at the beginning, you know, within about the third lecture, their little mini lecture, I just say to them, talk to the raw food company. So go onto Google or whoever. I use DuckDuckGo these days, but that's another conversation. Go onto your search engine and put in quality raw food for dogs. There are at least a dozen really good quality companies, and if you I can give you some names if you like. I don't want to prejudice anybody against anybody else.
I loved what you suggested with me. You were like, Lauren, you've got some really good ones locally. So I think sometimes look at what's local because of the fact that it hasn't got to travel all over the country to get to you. I know, for example, Honey's have been a great company to sort of know. So Honey's for me. And then I always get it wrong. The Butcher's Dog. Is that right?
Dogs. The Butcher's Dog is an Australian company. No. Very nice Australian company. You're thinking about the Farmer's Dog.
That's it.
Andy, there's lovely Andy Gray. He's just down the road from you. He's in Crediton in Devon. And he runs an organic, not even organic, it's beyond organic. It's a regenerative farm. Yeah, he's going to leave his farm in better condition than he found it, okay, which is an amazing thing. So he's called The Farmer's Dog. So he's very good down there. Other people that I do a lot of work, I've worked with everybody, okay, because I was kind of in on the ground floor in the UK. But the people that I work with regularly would be Pro Dog Raw, Honey's Real Pet Food, Benefit, B-E-N-Y Fit Natural, who else, Paleo Ridge, we use them as well. There's a number of companies, and that will give you just a start. And my suggestion would be give them a ring, and if you like the cut of their jib, and if you like their prices, and if they send you some samples on the cheap and your dog likes them, you're pretty much good to go. Now, the important thing is that these companies do two things. They will do just meaty type products. They'll do meat and organ and bone and what have you. Yeah, it's all in a pack. It all looks the same. But the other side of their business is they will do completes, where they'll put some veggies and some seaweed and a bit of fish oil so that it's more complete. A complete means that it's got all the goodies in there that you need, such that you could feed just that one diet for life. Technically, I wouldn't suggest that's a good idea for in any way. Okay, our big food corporations do. They say this is a maintenance diet. You can feed it for the rest of the dog's life stage, and I think that's a really, really bad idea. We don't even feed prisoners or convicts or the people in the army on exactly the same thing every single day, and yet we do it to our beloved dogs, Lauren. I mean,
it makes me really sad. And you know what? It gives me a lot of joy feeding dogs. Like, I have a lot of joy. I love it. I literally love it. And things like the other thing, all the companies you just said, I would recommend all of those companies personally. Used all of them. I have them all. There's like a super berry mix from Paleo Ridge. And there's some cool things that you can add in, and there's some fun. You can have a lot of fun with it. Like, I have a lot of fun feeding my dogs. Yeah. Whereas I have to say, it's very different. And I love the way less rules feeding, but I think I'm a way less rule type of person. So I'm not someone who lives with like rigidity and rules. Like, I like way less rules. And for me, there are a lot less rules in the way we feed these days, I think.
Yeah. Totally. What I always use the analogy of, it's a bit like driving. When you first learn to drive, you've got somebody who's watching over you and making sure that you can 3-point turn and do all that stuff. Okay. Do the same. If you're just new to raw, do the same. Let the companies do all the heavy lifting. Let them put the foods together, deliver it to your door. You put it in the freezer. You just defrost and feed the dog. Simple as that. Okay. Once, you know, after 6 months or 12 months, when you really feel like you've got the swing of it and the dog has got the swing of it and everything's good, then you can start just ordering the meaty bits, and then you put in some veg and some fish oil and some seaweed and some chlorella and a bit of this and a bit of that, and off you go. Now, you may say, oh, well, I don't know what to feed, you know, or, you know, I don't know whether it's balanced. But I bet you don't have that thought when you feed your lovely daughter.
Even cross my mind, right? Like, and to be fair, I think I should always have been a natural feeder I've never had this worry of what do I feed my dogs. I play around, I experiment, we have fun. Yeah. And I would say our dogs, lots of people, I know I obviously have clients in America and Canada and so many different places. I don't have dogs with allergies. I don't have dogs with health conditions, really. I just have healthy dogs. I have really healthy dogs, and dogs whose teeth are so much better, and dogs whose breath is just cool. Like, I love the health from our dogs. So what would be some of the benefits you've seen from raw feeding, Nick?
How many parameters are there of a healthy dog? Okay. We had a really lovely lecturer. He's a guy called Eddie Clutton. If you're watching this, Eddie, hello. Thank you for teaching me all this stuff. And he said, he was teaching to us about anesthetics in the heart. And he said, he was Welsh, and this is a really bad Welsh accent, but I'm going to do it because it kind of adds to the story. He said, there are 256 parameters of cardiac function, and halothane ruins all of them. Okay. And so I'm going to take that from Eddie Clutton, and I'm going to say raw food does the opposite. There are, let's say, 1,000 parameters of health within a dog, you know, clean teeth, sweet breath, healthy, wet, cold nose, bright eyes, no epiphora, etc. Clean ears, good smell of coat, the bowels, you know, good bowel function, no excessive gurgling, no excessive fartiness, great anal gland function, good energy, good bloom of the coat, alert, great sense of smell, which is important with working dogs and you know, bomb squad dogs and things like that. We have been there. So really, if you think of every parameter, I can't think of a parameter which is depressed when you use raw food, which is logical, because you've got a mechanism which has been improved upon over 45 million years for raw food. And if you give it the fuel, the nutrition that it has been designed for over many, 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 many generations, you're going to get the results that you want. And the results that you want is supreme health. And it's as simple as that, which is why kids get it and completely non-scientific people totally get it. But us scientists have to climb a mountain to be able to get to the other side, go, oh, yeah, of course. Of course. Now I get it.
Now, I know one of the biggest questions that owners like ours would have, and I know what I do, so I can add that to the conversation in a minute. We use food in our dogs training. So we use food in our dogs training. So that might be delivered in a fashion of like, for example, recall training or for me, agility training. And I've got ways I do this. But how would you go about using food, therefore, in your training in some way? Like we bake our own food. So we home bake or we home make or we home and we add our own supplements to that and we add our own mixes to that. Would you do similar or are there things that you do additionally? And I know that doesn't necessarily apply to everybody, but the dog world and the dog community I'm in, Nick, are definitely going to want to use some of their dog's daily food or some of their dog's food generally for rewarding and reinforcing great behavior.
Totally. This is a really easy one. And the answer is, and it's on the vid, and treats should have one ingredient. Yeah. So if you're using a beef treat, the ingredients are beef, 100%, full stop. That's it. Yeah. Okay. Preferably organic, but I'm not going to twist your arm on that one. Yeah. And if you're using a lamb treat, lamb, 100%, full stop. That's it. No glycerin, no colorants, no additives, no this, that, and the other. Just honest to God. That's it. And you can use those. And absolutely, you can use those. So basically, what the people do is, they will take little bits of meat, they will just dry them gently, put them in a bag and sell them to you. That's it. Or you can do it yourself. You just put the oven on fairly low and you put them in on a baking sheet, says he who's never baked in his life before, but you put them on a baking sheet and you basically just dry them. Do they need to be liver? Yes, they do. But if a dog eats loads of liver during, an extended session, they might get a bit squitty. So you can just use muscle meat. Yeah, just meat. So that is not a problem whatsoever. I don't have a problem. I do have a problem with obese dogs, but I don't have a problem with giving treats to dogs because protein tends not to be obesogenic. Yeah, just giving pure protein and fat. It's the carbs that do the damage, as you know.
Absolutely. And the same, I mean, before we go to an event or a competition, the listeners know that I compete week in, week out. Ours would be venison and we do sometimes offer, but mainly we'd use venison. We use all sources of protein. Again, I wouldn't even tell a lie. There is everything from horse in our freezer and prep ready to go to turkey, goose, goat. They're not our goats. I'll add that part to it. Any safety tips for bones as well? I mean, my dogs have a lot of bones. They have bones on a very regular basis. And I know a lot of people are very scared of bones and scared of using bones. My dogs have raw meaty bones at least multi times a week. So what would you say?
Okay, it's an easy one. And I've done a video. If you go to the website down below, you'll find it. Okay. And again, just do it. Yeah. You know, if you want to find information elsewhere, I don't care. That's fine. Just make sure you get your information. My process is a bit like, you have primary school, secondary school, and then whatever next, apprenticeship, college, university, what have you. Yeah. It's a three-part progression. Okay. Same with bones. And so what you do is that if you've got an adult dog who's never had raw food and bones before, you start with the really easy soft stuff. So things like chicken carcasses, and that's where you start. You would then progress, and once they get the swing of that, you would then progress to turkey necks, chicken necks, duck necks, chicken's feet, and what have you. So it's simple stuff, not enormous but not minute, and that would be the secondary school. And then if you want to go to an advanced level, you'd be looking at ribs and brisket and vertebrae and hips, and you would avoid limb bones in all but an advanced bone eater. And because the thing that people do is they'll always go straight from the marrow bone and then wonder why the dog gets a bit squitty. It's because they're getting more fat than they've had for the last month all in one go, and therefore they get a bit squitty because they're not used to it. So just going straight from like the classic butcher's marrow bone, not a great idea. Start small. And in a nutshell, this is the vid. You don't even need to buy the vid. You start, for example, with chicken carcasses, and then you will, or turkey necks, duck necks. Okay, they're really simple, they're quite big, you can just chew from one end to the next. You then move up to ribs, something like that, and then only in advanced stage would you go for leg bones and what have you.
I love watching. It's funny, some people hate the sound of their dog chewing or gnawing on. I love it. And my guys, they're very lucky. They get a bone of some fashion most days, but sometimes I just stuff bones with their food, their supplement mix and their mints together. Yeah. And they'll have that. We'll sometimes refreeze things, or we'll play around partially defrost and then freeze. And basically they'll sit and gnaw on that for a good few hours, Nick. So yeah, super cool stuff. That's so great. If you were to think about the food industry and how it could maybe improve in terms of pets, I know it's a big question, but what might you change if you could?
In terms of nutrition for dogs, or in terms of the planet, or you've got to give me some parameters, because I could talk about it. Lauren, I'm like you. I could talk about this stuff for hours. Okay. So it's not Nick, please tell us about this. It's Nick. Don't tell us about 99% of things that you wanted to tell us about. Just tell us about this tiny little thing.
Okay. Nutrition for pets, pet industry, nutrition for dogs.
How would you improve nutrition? Right. I'm going to talk about the planet anyway, so I'm going to disregard your question. I'm just going to do it. Because the best way to get the most nutrition into food, and dogs eat a mainly meat-based diet, is to raise the chicken, the lamb, the beef in the most nutritive environment. Yeah, if you've got fantastic soil, it means you've got very, very nourishing grass for your sheep and your cattle. And if you've got very nourishing grass, you've got well nourished bacteria within the gut of those two ruminants, which means that you've got very good nutrient transfer to the tissues of those beautiful beasts, which are then graciously slaughtered in order to feed your dog. Okay. So I would urge as much as possible for the farming industry, the sheep and beef industry, to, as they are able to afford, to move to more regenerative type agriculture. And with the price of fertilizer at the moment, there's a lot of people who are going, right, that's it, the only way I'm going to make profit is to reduce my fertilizer, my pesticide, my herbicide, my fungicide, my all those sides, and I'm just going to grow my animals on grass. And that's really wonderful. That's, you know, one good side about this whole economic thing. Yeah, so that, now people would say, oh, you're an idealist, and, you know, we've all got to eat and what have you. But it's better to eat a small amount of really good quality meat than it is to eat, you know, burgers and burgers and burgers of absolute rubbish that have been churned out of concentrated animal feed operations. Quite apart from the fact, you don't want to be contributing to battery hens, to cattle who've just been fed on grain, you know, and are miserable because they never see a blade of grass. So for the sake of the dogs, and for the sake of the amazing, beautiful ruminants and pigs and chickens who are raised for the sake of our dogs and for us, then I think if we can pay those people who are investing in the very best farming methods, I think that is a wonderful, it's a win-win-win-win scenario.
So for everyone listening, Nick, what animals do you have? Because I think it would be interesting to hear about your animals.
Okay, right. Okay, I didn't know you were going to ask that one.
I wanted to ask what you were feeding, and then I was like, no, actually, I'm just going to ask what animals you even have, because this is something I don't know. I don't know what animals you have.
Okay, right. Okay, so from the smallest to the biggest. So we've got 9 chickens, 2 cockerels, 2 peacocks. There's a story. 2 peacocks. we've got 1 snowshoe cat called Ziggy, and then we've got 2 whippet Italian greyhounds. The elder is called Bluebell, and the younger is called Mouse. And then we have 2 children, Arthur and Ophelia. So those are all the animals
in the house,
and one wife, Ellie. So that's all the animals.
Because I was listening and I was thinking to myself, like, we have probably lots of people don't know, I have goats, I have chickens, I have horses, we have Hebridean sheep, we have a huge menagerie too, of course, as well as the dogs, and we have 3 feral cats. So we do have a real range. And just listening, I'm like, wow. I mean, your whole animal life is probably fed that way too, right? Like, you're considerate of every.
Yeah, the chickens, they, you know, when they're allowed out, they are scratching around in the woods, and the peacocks, they just do their own thing and do whatever the chickens are doing, really. The cat is fed raw, and the dogs are obviously fed raw. And we raised the kids from 0 to now they're 9 and 10. In the presence of raw fed cats and dogs. Yeah, the cat would have chicken wings on the floor in the room, in the little, you know, the utility room at the back. The dogs would have chicken wings on the floor, and the children would be crawling around. And it's just, well, that's just the way it is. We wipe up the best we can, but that's it. And we keep it as clean as we can, but they were exposed to those things, and we had not a day of illness. My kids have hardly seen the doctor at all.
Amazing point. And I remember Eliza being, and this is only something that Nick and I've just discovered, is Eliza is 10 and you have a 9 and a 10-year-old. So we're in a similar sort of stage with children. Yeah. And for me, I remember Eliza walking around at about just over 1. So she was toddling really. And then one of the dogs had obviously popped a chicken wing under a bed and decided that the chicken wing it's going under bed. And I remember Eliza picking it up. And I remember at the moment being like, Eliza, pop that down and quickly give that to a dog and let's like move that on. And we've never ever, Eliza has been one of the, she's so healthy. She hasn't, I don't think she's ever really seen a doctor, maybe an ear problem once, but really doesn't go to the doctor. And yet so many people are so cautious and so careful and so worried and so extremely worried. And for me, Eliza is a really healthy, happy, normal, whatever normal might mean or not normal, I don't know. And fun kid to be around, in the sense that it's just life, right? Like feeding our dog. Yeah. Yeah. And working with the dogs is life.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's great. And, you know, there is the hygiene hypothesis, meaning that the more you clean the house, the more prone your child, and there is work to suggest this, that the more prone your child is to asthma and eczema. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the science backs up, you know, don't be too cleanly. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not saying live in squalor, you know, up to your knees in God knows what, but, the immune system relies on exposure to a continual low level exposure of certain pathogens. Yeah, for sure, absolutely for sure.
So Nick, one of my biggest questions, and it's definitely something I've experienced my own vet at working with you and working with Everest and Brave, how do you sit alongside the conventional vet? Like, I had to say to my own vet, who I think very highly of, in the sense that I've had her a long time and she's a great, great vet. And at the same time, I had to say to her, look, I'm really sorry. I'm going to go down this route because I feel this is the best thing for my dog. And I feel like I've woken up to it. And this is what I need to do for Everest. And this is what I need to do for Brave. Like, how do you sit alongside conventional vets?
I have a great relationship with all the vets that I work with. Okay. So what will normally happen is somebody will, they have a problem, and their vet says, you've got this problem and you need this treatment. Okay. And they'll either say, yep, that's great. Or they'll say, if it was me and I had this condition, I wouldn't go down that route. And so, please, can I talk to a holistic person? And so then they find me and we have a brief chat initially, and then I will then communicate with the vet and even speak to the vet in order to make sure that we're all on the same page. I think the greatest fear of vets is that I will immediately take them off some conventional treatment. I won't. What I say to clients is, let's try and put the conventional treatment out of business. Okay. So gradually we will, say with epilepsy or some kind of gastroenteritis or skin itch or something like that, they're on treatment, they're stable, but the owner's not happy with the with the treatment, or sometimes the results. You know, the vets are working as hard as possible, and they're not getting the results that they want, and therefore they kind of go, "Oh God, what am I going to do now?" And so, if somebody comes along and says, "Well, we've got these approaches. We can change the diet. We can look at supplements. We can look at herbs. We can look at homeopathics to try and get things organized." So that's how we do. Very, very rarely do I get any pushback to my face. Now, I'm sure they're probably muttering under their breath, "Who is this lunatic? And, you know, what on earth is he doing with my client?" But I think sometimes it's, "Oh, I'm really glad somebody's got some logical ideas." Okay. They may not like what I'm doing, but they, in 99% of cases, they can't fault the logic, you know. So the quick answer to that question is we get on really pretty well. Back, you know, 20 years ago, it was pretty contentious and there would be a lot of pushback. But nowadays, I think I've been around long enough that people think that, yeah, he's a bit mad, but he's not going to do any harm. So, you know, if the client wants to go there, then fine. And then if we get results, you know, I think that's just another little move forward to demonstrate that there are many ways to approach a case. Drugs are great, and I say that on a daily basis. Drugs are great, but if there are non-drug approaches to a certain disease, then why not go down that road? You know, it's logical. It's very logical.
That's where I was with Everest. I was like, you know what, with Everest, I just thought, you know what, this cannot do any harm. And the route that I was going down felt harmful. It felt harmful, like chemotherapy felt harmful. And the route that I was going down, I don't know if I even told you, I had her scanned about a year ago. She's got a mild medial shoulder case really going on. And when they scan, they can find no evidence of any cancers, nothing, like no evidence of any cancers. I literally was like, when you scan her, because she's going under for an MRI, and I didn't want to put her under for an MRI, but because the shoulder had been playing up for quite a while, I was like, I'm going to just have a look at this shoulder, mild medial shoulder disease. And so basically when we looked, there's no cancers at all. And yet the last scan, when the conventional medicine or vet said to me, there is no hope, like this is a 3-month to 6-month diagnosis, for me, that's when I turned to you. And that's when that gave me hope. I think the weirdest thing is sometimes to have a bit of hope, right? That is the start of it, that you've got something that you can try and something that you can do, and you feel you're trying something positive, or you're trying something that's, you didn't say to me, this is curable. What you said to me is, let's try this.
Yeah. I think intention is really, really important. I think if you go towards a case with a really positive intent, you know, realistic, yeah, this is cancer, you know, it may not turn out very well. But if you come to the case with a strong positive intent, I think that's a really, you know, as you're saying, I'm just mirroring what you're saying. I think it strangely brings a new extra ingredient to the whole interaction. And if nothing else, it makes you feel like you are empowered, as opposed to, okay, we're going for chemo, okay, we're going for radiotherapy, oh God, the dog is looking pretty ropey the day after. You are empowered. You're saying, right, we're going to do this, and I know why we're doing that. We're going to give these herbs, and I know why we're doing that, and we are going to do, you know, trail off this treatment, this conventional treatment, and I understand what's happening there, and my vet understands what's happening, and they're on board because we are working together responsibly. You know, it's a win-win. It's a win-win.
And I have to say, and I don't want to go too out there for people because I don't want to scare them, but for me, like, the universe has this really cool way of, I mean, it wasn't cool in some ways because it kind of, I had Everest cancer, my dad diagnosed with terminal cancer, and Brave have this massive spinal trauma. And for me, it was a sudden wake up. Like, it was a massive, like, wake up moment. Like, wake up to the fact that you need to enjoy stuff. Wake up to the fact that you need to think about health. You need to think about what you're putting in. You need to think about yourself. You need to think about all your dogs. You need to think about all your animals. You literally, it was huge wake up. And I think the most empowering thing here is that we have so much choice. We have so much choice, and we have, and sometimes we really don't feel like we have choice. And we maybe, I don't know, whether that be you go to your vet and they tell you to use this. And I've always been someone who questions, but oh my goodness, I question now. Like, I question to the point that I'm like, no, I don't really think that's necessary. And I'll try not to be at all confrontational in it, but I think I can't help it sometimes in my way of quizzing. Because you're up with the quiz and you're like, no, I don't want to do that. Actually, that's not what I want to do.
Sure. Right. I mean, that's your nature. You're a forceful personality. Okay. And your vet knows that. And she also knows that you do your homework. So if you come up with a suggestion, your vet, I presume, is going to go, okay, can I think of a really good reason that this is really going to damage the welfare of the dog or the chicken or the goat or what have you? I can't think. Okay, yes, Lauren, go for it. Okay, most people don't feel that confident to approach their vet. However, you know, my greatest intent is to improve and prolong the welfare of my patients, and that's the intent of your vet. Okay, they're coming at it from a different perspective because that's how they've been taught. But vets up and down the UK and around the world, that's pretty much their only intent. How they do that is another thing. But so if you're having a bit of a battle with your vet because you want to do something that's more holistic and they want to do something that's more conventional, just remember that they're coming from it from the right place. Yeah. And if you can get in touch with somebody with a holistic vet or a raw feeding vet or an acupuncture vet who can reasonably have a logical conversation, even just by email, with them and kind of join the team, that's a really positive. I find that's how I do it. I always go for the teamwork approach. Yeah. Your vet is the lead person. You and your dog, you're in the middle, and I'm just the guy on the side who's helping to maximize health, minimize drugs. That's about it.
And I love how, I mean, my vet for sure was very, very open to, you know what, this is what I would do, but I'm also open to, really, Lauren, in this stage, like, what do you do? What do you feel comfortable with? Mm-hmm. And I think that's super cool. Now, vets, very quickly though, Nick, back to the raw feeding. Vets with raw feeding aren't always so open to it. How would a pet owner tackle that, knowing that raw feeding is such a passion area? And I do know that raw feeding for a lot of vets is still quite controversial.
Yeah. There are four reasons. Okay, the World Small Animal Veterinary Association had a go at raw feeding in about 2012, and these are the main areas. It's benefit, bugs, balance, and bones. Okay, benefit, bugs, balance, and bones. So number one, they say there's no benefits, but actually there are scientific papers which have demonstrated the benefits. I won't bore you. If you want a good reference, then Connor Brady, Feeding Dogs, is a great one. Hopefully the team will put it down here. Yeah, Connor Brady, Feeding Dogs. And basically he looks at the pros and cons of raw, pros and cons of dry kibble feeding, and weighs them both up against each other in quite a slightly humorous but very serious way. Okay, brilliant. So benefits, lots of benefits, and science is catching up with the fact, oh my God, my dog is looking better than they have for years and years and years since I've been feeding raw. Yeah, you know it, I know it, but science is catching up. Benefits, bugs. There are numerous papers saying we found salmonella, we found listeria, we found E. coli, we found this, that, and the other in food. Yes, I completely agree, because it's a real, live, living product. And what we find is that in practice we just don't get infections in dogs, okay, because you can guarantee there are a lot of people out there gunning against raw food. And if there was anything like a significant number, even if it was one in 10,000, I can guarantee there's probably 2 million dogs being fed on raw food in the UK. So if there was, I can't even do the maths. If there was a one in 10,000 chance, you'd have 20, 30, 40 dogs every single day on death's door at the vets because they've got salmonella. And if that was the case, you can guarantee it would be on the front page of the Daily Mail.
We'd all know it.
It would be all over everywhere and be on Dogs Today and Edition Dog and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You'd hear about it. You'd hear nothing but because there are powers who would love to scare you about raw food. So basically, there are bugs in it. But I think what's happened is they're at such a low level. They are detectable if you put them through a laboratory and grow them up, especially in special medium and stuff like this. You can detect them. But the reality is that the dogs... gut, the stomach acid is so low and their digestive process is so attuned to making the most of the food that's there and getting rid of any bugs that might threaten the gut that we just don't see problems. So there you go. Benefits, bugs. So there are bugs. Do we see problems? Pretty much. It's a vanishingly small number of dogs who get any problems at all. There's a couple of papers I could quote to you now. I'm very happy to do that, but I won't bore you. They are there. One is by Antarinimi, 2019, and another one is by Kamek, and that's about a 2021 paper. Okay, so you can have a little Google on those. So benefits, bugs, balance. Okay, so the next thing is they'll say, oh, you know, look at this. We've taken your recipe and we've put it through a computer and it's not balanced. And I yes, it's not balanced. Just as my breakfast wasn't balanced, my lunch wasn't balanced, my dinner this evening is not going to be balanced. Okay. In fact, Lauren, have you ever in your life had a balanced meal?
You know what? I've actually had one and it was terrible. I tried one of these shake things about years ago. It was the most horrific thing. I was like, that is disgusting. So no, I have not. I didn't even complete a sip. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. So it's not logical. So what you want is a balanced diet. A diet is a thing that happens over 2, 3, 4 weeks. A meal is what happens when you sit down, or as a dog, when your plate goes on the floor. That's a meal, which is different from a diet. You need your diet to be balanced. Meals are part of that thing, which form an overall balanced thing. Because if we were supplying fuel for a Mercedes-Benz, it's got to be the right fuel. It's got to be the right octane and it's the right temperature and everything else. Okay. And it's got to be the same every single time. Yeah. The stuff you get out of the pump is exactly the same every single time. But actually, here's news to everybody. Your dog is not a Mercedes-Benz. Okay. They are far, 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 far more complicated than the most complicated engine ever designed in the world. You know, the space shuttle is nothing compared to your dog. And the beauty is that their metabolism is so finely tuned that it can regulate, you know, the body can say, oh, we're a little bit low on calcium, so let's just absorb a little bit more calcium from the gut for the next 10 days. Or, oh, we've got lots of magnesium, so let's just go a little bit easy on the magnesium, or the phosphorus, or the selenium, or the cadmium, or the protein, or the fat, or the whatever it might be. Okay, we are not feeding a machine. We don't need to have strict limits on every meal. We need to give variety, because then individuals within that breed, you know, if you line up 100 collies, they're all going to need very slightly different zinc requirements, different phosphorus requirements, different protein requirements. And by giving a variety, each of those 100 agility collies will be able to say, yeah, I will select from what you're offering me what I need. And I will deposit the waste in a beautiful little poo somewhere of your choosing. Okay, that's the way nature works. And to approach it in any other way is completely delusional, in my opinion. Yeah, you can't Absolutely. Feed, you know, I think it's impossible to create a diet that will fit any given individual.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And so, in terms of, I mean, you're for me, I'm all in, and I yeah. bet at the same yeah. time, and I've been all in for a long time. I yeah. bet at the same time, people are starting to wake up and ask questions here. I bet they're starting to be. There are questions.
Oh yeah, totally. They absolutely are. I don't think I've got to the end of my thing. So benefit bugs, balance. So balance, yes, balanced diet, not balanced thing. And bones, yes, bones.
And vets freak out about them. Vets freak out about the bones.
Vets very much freak out. But dogs have been eating bones for 45 million years. Okay, so sometimes you need to teach your dog how to eat the bone. But if you start from a pup. You know, I'm talking 3 weeks, chicken wings to 3 week old pups. On you go. Fantastic. That's good. Then they grow up. They've got better head structure. They're better. They've got better brain. They are calmer. They can self-soothe and, you know, all these things. Their gut works better because they've got all this, you know, sandy, bony material moving through. So bones are an essential part of a good raw food diet. And so, that's the way to go with that. So benefits, bugs, balance, and bones. Those are the four elements that a vet or a nutritionist is gonna have a go. So to use those as a structure for, you know that that's where they're going to go, and to have some thoughts in those four areas is very, very helpful.
Now, literally, I'm listening, I'm here, and I am thinking, Nick, we could spend a day, a week, we could literally chat. There's so many things I know our listeners would like to know. And yet I'm also very aware of where we are this evening. I'm also aware that I'm about to go and teach 400 students dog training on an online event. So I'm literally aware of where we are. And yet I would love to chat to you again, and I'd love our listeners to hear a little bit more, because I think we've got more. I think we've got parasites, I think we've got vaccinations, I think we've got literally there is more to discuss. So I don't think it's for today, but I think there's more. What do you think?
I'm absolutely delighted. We got on really well. And you know, this is the first time we've properly met. Okay. So this is not staged. Okay, we didn't just come you know have fun last night and say, right, let's do something. Yeah, this is it. This is literally the first proper conversation we've ever had, and I'm delighted. It's electrifying. It's great. I love your energy. I will come back and talk to your guys anytime you like. I think we should do a day seminar, actually. We should get there. You and I will be on stage, we'll do our thing, and we will educate and entertain people, and we will empower people with how simple it is to think about the raw thing. Okay, we'll talk and have a great time. It's a must, Lauren. It's an absolute must. Let's do it.
Simplicity, Nick. I think the fact that it's easy, it's doable, it's simple, it's achievable. Yeah. Let's make it happen. So thank you so much for joining us all today. At the same time, this is not the end. This is just the beginning. I'm sure there's so much more. Yeah. It's been an absolute pleasure, Nick. So literally, I can't thank you enough. That was this episode of the Sexy and the Squirrel podcast. I hope that you are all literally leaving us waking up to a whole new world out there. Join us next week. We've got some exciting additions for you, and we can't wait to share a little bit more. And remember, stay sexy.
Stay sexy.
Yeah, he's got it. Stay sexy.
Stay sexy. Hey, before you go, have you taken part in the worldwide Sexier Than a Squirrel Challenge?
It's a 25-day online video program, huge energy, amazing community, and over 100,000 people are already taking part.
The only question is, you know where you are today. Where do you want to be in 25 days from now? Head to absolutedogs.me/sexy.